From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Rasha McChesney. Juneau's September 11th memorial just got an upgrade. KTOO's Matt Miller talked to the designer about how he was inspired to create a memorial to the lives lost during the event that led to America's longest war.
Brent Fisher says his wife encouraged him to propose and design a memorial for Juneau after one of his childhood friends died on 9/11. Christopher Newton was aboard Flight 77 when it crashed into the Pentagon. Fisher says they were in the Boy Scouts together in California, and he remembers him as having the greatest smile.
It was very personal to me, and it just symbolized everything that my wife Debbie and I felt, and the club just totally embraced it as well.
That club was the Glacier Valley Rotary Club, which he was a member of at the time. Riverside Rotary Park is the club's most visible service project in town. For the park, Fisher designed a broken pentagon with two missing sides as a flagpole base.
Each side measures 4 feet in length. That represents the four lost planes. The two missing sides of the pentagon represent the twin towers of the World Trade Center. The memorial is constructed with concrete and Pennsylvania marble to represent the strength found in our heroes. The forget-me-not flowers symbolize the rebirth of patriotism and our promise to never forget.
It was built by Rotarians in months as one of the first 9/11 memorials in the country. The park served as the venue for services on the first anniversary. Now, on the 20th anniversary of 9/11, Osama bin Laden, who orchestrated the attacks, is long dead. The war is over. U.S. troops are out of Afghanistan, and many Americans and Afghan allies were airlifted out in a hectic evacuation. Fisher says initially entering the war and then getting out of Afghanistan were both the right things to do.
However, I personally think that how it was done and leaving Americans there goes against everything that I think we believe as Americans. And I hate to see that. It's a tragedy. And we should be getting our Americans out of there and our allies that helped us over the last 20 years, because they will be killed.
Fisher originally designed a low wall that would partially enclose the memorial itself, but it was never built, at least not until this summer when the Glacier Valley Rotary Club also moved, a shelter closer to the playground, and erected a large pavilion in the park. Charlie Williams with the Rotary says the additions were prompted by a recently developed master plan for the park.
It always involves money and time. So in this situation, we could build a shelter for a fraction of the cost that would cost the city. And so they recognize the value of leveraging a few dollars to get the things that are in the master plan as a wise thing to do.
He says they'll likely install engraved bricks and an interpretive sign at the memorial by next spring. Williams says the latest improvements to the park were made possible by support from the Juneau Community Foundation and the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
This year's September 11th memorial ceremony starts at 9:40 a.m. Saturday and will wrap up at 10:15 at Riverside Rotary Park. Those attending the ceremony are encouraged to socially distance and wear masks. Juneau's Bartlett Regional Hospital opened a clinic to treat COVID-19 patients this week using monoclonal antibody therapy. It's a method used to reduce symptoms in patients with early-stage COVID-19 infections. Antibodies support the immune system as it defends against the virus.
It reduces the chance of people having to be hospitalized and experiencing severe COVID illness.
The clinic is the brainchild of Chief Nursing Officer Kim McDowell. She says it reduces admissions to the hospital, and right now, that's important.
The last couple weeks, we did see quite a few increase of COVID-19 patients. We were seeing them quite frequently through our emergency department, many being admitted, and unfortunately, we did see some deaths from that.
Three people died with COVID-19 at Bartlett in August. McDowell says admissions have begun to level out at the hospital, but she's keeping an eye on the rising case counts in the community. Bartlett has offered the treatment since the first wave of the pandemic, but McDowell says the dedicated clinic will reduce pressure on the limited nursing staff. It's also intended to reduce pressure on the statewide healthcare system if a COVID-19 patient at Bartlett requires intubation and they have to be medevaced elsewhere.
By doing our part with decreasing hospitalizations here, we'll also help our partners in Seattle and in Anchorage, where if we can prevent severe illness, that would prevent somebody being medevaced to an already full hospital.
The treatment is pretty simple. It's a one-time IV that stays in the arm for about 20 minutes. McDowell says patients then stay at the hospital for an hour to make sure they don't have an allergic reaction. If you've recently tested positive for COVID-19, the best way to learn more about the antibody treatment is through a primary care provider. If you don't have one, call 907-796-8900. That's 907-796-8900 to reach Bartlett's staff for information and scheduling. The EPA said today it will resume trying to veto large-scale mining upstream from Bristol Bay. The administrative decision follows a court decision favorable to mine opponents. They've long argued that the proposed pebble mine threatens commercial and subsistence fishing. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports.
Bristol Bay Native Corporation Vice President Daniel Chayette is among those celebrating that the EPA is again seeking to use a process created by the Clean Water Act to protect the watershed. It's called the 404C process and informally known as an administrative veto.
Bristol Bay is economically and culturally built on the region's fisheries, and pebble threatens that economy and culture. And it is simply the wrong mine in the wrong place.
Efforts to block the mine have gone on for years. Under the Obama administration, the EPA researched the watershed and proposed to veto the mine. The Trump administration halted the process and mine opponents sued. This summer, a federal appeals court ruled that the government can only halt the process if it finds the mine would be unlikely to do serious harm. Now, the EPA is essentially agreeing with anti-pebble groups that the standard has not been met. Governor Mike Dunleavy has taken Pebble's side in past disputes. He says it seems like the federal government is trying to bankrupt Alaska.
You can't shut down a state method by which it creates jobs, opportunity, and wealth, and expect it to be a viable state. And I hope that's not the plan.
Pebble says its state-of-the-art design would contain mined material without endangering fish streams. While Donald Trump was still president, the Army Corps of Engineers denied Pebble's permit application. Pebble is appealing that call. Dunleavy's Department of Law also filed an appeal of Pebble's permit denial. Dunleavy now says he's not convinced Pebble's proposal would be safe for the environment. He says it deserves further study. But the governor says the EPA's administrative veto could block future proposals, too.
There's a real possibility that this $1 trillion worth of wealth may never get an opportunity to go through a process in which it's developed according to science and regulations that will safeguard the environment.
Mine opponents are working other angles to kill the mine. They want Congress to impose permanent restrictions. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Alaska's state government may have trouble paying its bills over the next year due to a dispute over taking funds from the piggy bank the state has used to balance the budget in the past. And that could lead to the state spending from funds that most lawmakers want to protect for the future. Or it could go without paying some of its bills, but the legislature would have to agree to a change for it to be legal. Alexi Painter is the legislature's top nonpartisan budget expert. He says the state could run out of money if oil revenue comes in lower than the forecast.
There's no backstop fund now, so if we have a deficit, there's no funds there to fill it.
In past years, the Constitutional Budget Reserve was that backstop, but spending from it requires the agreement of three quarters of both the Senate and House of Representatives, and that hasn't happened this year. The Senate Finance Committee is considering a bill the House recently passed to fund permanent fund dividends and other items. If the Senate passes the bill without changes, it's projected to leave a relatively small amount at the end of the budget year compared to the size of the budget. And Painter says if the projection is wrong, there could be no money left.
Having no margin of error and not having a backstop fund is concerning just because of that difficulty in the budget world of being accurate in that projection.
Without drawing from the Constitutional Budget Reserve, there are only two other large accounts the state could draw from if it runs out of money, and most lawmakers have wanted to protect both of them. Bethel Democrat Senator Lyman Hoffman says the Senate Finance Committee could keep $54 million more in the general fund to pay for the budget. That's how much the House approved in oil and gas tax credits. Hoffman says the money could instead come from the Constitutional Budget Reserve, or CBR.
I would think that the committee would consider the option of funding the $54 million out of the CBR again.
the state has run out of money in the general fund before, in 1987. The administration at the time stopped some money the legislature had budgeted from being spent, and the legislature later retroactively approved the action. That's the latest from the KTOO Newsroom. I'm Rasha McChesney.